The good, the bad, and the science. Sensation movies, comedians, and scientists. The good, the bad, and the science.
Welcome to The Good, the Bad, and the Science, the show that breaks down the science of television and movies with a comedian and a scientist. Today we're discussing chasing ocean giants. So I'll ask about sperm whales, pilot whales, and squid. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I've got two wonderful guests joining me today. My first guest, wow, he is one of the best stand-up comedians of all time. He's a living legend. He had unforgettable roles in two of my personal favorite TV shows ever, Flight of the Conchords and Delocated. I could make this intro so long it takes up the entire podcast, but I'll just say I'm deeply honored to have him here today. Welcome to the show, Todd Barry.
Hey, everyone.
So listen, before I bring on our next guest, I have to ask you, considering what we're talking about today, if you've ever snorkeled.
I was thinking about that. I know I've never, what's the other thing when you have the tank on?
Scuba diving.
Yeah, I've never done that. You can tell now that I'm not the scientist on the show, but if I've snorkeled, it was very brief and maybe in a pool or something, but I never did intensive whale,
whale sightings.
No. I guess no is the basically no, but maybe once in a pool or something.
Okay, that's kind of what I figured. It was hard for me to imagine you like out in the coral reefs, swimming with sharks or something.
Well, it's hard to imagine most people doing that. I would say,
that's
I would
true.
Argue.
Well, except for our next guest, so it's a perfect segue. Our next guest is a marine scientist. She's a diver, exhibition leader, and presenter. Welcome back to the show, Charlie Young.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back.
Of course, Charlie. Thank you so much for coming back. Last time we spoke, we talked about Happy Feet, which was a really fun penguin-based episode. But I believe since then, you've actually swam with some ocean giants. Is that correct?
Yeah, so here in the UK, I've been going in search of the second largest shark in the ocean, the basking shark. I've been trying to get up close and personal with them in the very cold Scottish waters.
Wow. And have you had some close encounters?
So sadly, this year, the sharks didn't actually turn up, but last year they did. And oh, it's like, honestly, one of the best things I've ever done. We had a 10-meter long shark just come out of the sort of bottle green waters and just come towards me. And we had this moment of seeing one another and it was like, oh God. And I was like, oh God. And it was, yeah, just absolutely breathtaking.
You were both equally scared of each other, it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't think the shark was quite prepared to see me. It was kind of going along feeding with its mouth open and then saw me and kind of went, oh, and sort of shut its mouth quickly and then eyed me and continued on its way.
Well, my hat is off to you for your bravery. I'm more of a Todd than a Charlie, if I may. I, as you know, have not spent any time scuba diving or snorkeling. I'm deathly afraid of really anything. I'm jellyfish alone, I think, would just freak me out. Anyway, I'm in awe of you. But we're here today to discuss Chasing Ocean Giants, which, of course, you can only watch on Discovery Plus. And really, if I'm being honest, the only way to get Discovery Plus is to go to discoveryplus.com/goodbadscience and start your 7-day free trial. I love this show. I didn't know squat about sperm whales before this. But what about you, Todd? Did you enjoy the show? Were there interesting tidbits you picked up from Chasing Ocean Giants?
I did enjoy it. I just couldn't believe. I was curious as to the guy who hosted it. They said he was a Wall Street lawyer.
Yeah.
I just don't know. How do you make that transition into guy who knows everything about whales and knows how to operate a camera under, like, was he, I wonder, like, if there were times when people needed legal advice and they were like, he's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to this snorkel shop. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting. And my favorite part, you want to know my favorite part?
I do.
Or is it too soon for that in the show?
Let's no, do it.
I liked when they were sleeping. I thought that was really cool. Like, I never knew they did that.
It's epic. It's so mind-blowing that they do that, and they're only doing it for such a short period of time. So they mentioned around 15 minutes, and it's not even proper sleep like we know it. It's like this half sleep, so they stay partially awake whilst they're doing it to keep an eye out for predators, to also stay in their social groups, and to keep swimming if they need to.
How many times a day do they do that?
Not that often. They're only doing it for about 7% of the day. So they're spending most of the day hunting.
Wow. Yeah, my mind was absolutely blown at that. I mean, A, because of the visual, it looks like some sort of big Hollywood, like sci-fi production thing. It looks really yeah. strange, like not natural, I guess. But then also, yeah, that they're so huge. I think they said they weighed like 50 tons and only sleep for 15 minutes. I mean, I weigh, you know, like 150 and some change, and I need like 9 hours or I'm not functional. So, yeah, are they doing some sort of like super nap, like superpower nap? How does that work?
Yeah, it's like napping. So part of their brain is still functioning so that they can keep aware of their surroundings. But also, you know, a fundamental difference, we're both mammals, but we are involuntary breathers. So our subconscious is always keeping us breathing, whereas they have to physically think about breathing. So, you know, if they just slept for 9 hours, they would die. So ultimately, they have to consciously stay aware all the time so that they can come back to the surface to breathe, because otherwise, yeah, they would end up drowning.
But you're saying on the surface, it's easier for them, or they can breathe automatically?
So they're always, I don't know, you know, there are so many mysteries about the sperm whale still. We don't even know why they do it in this formation. Maybe it's a way of kind of protecting themselves, or maybe it's just comfortable. Who knows? But when they come to the surface, that triggers them to breathe. But then when they go down, obviously they don't breathe the same way that we do, where we're just, you know, constantly taking breaths in and out all the time. They can go to the surface, take 10 breaths, and then dive up to 90 minutes. So their breathing is a very different process, but they have to be thinking about, okay, I'm running out of oxygen here. I have to go back to the surface to breathe. Because if they didn't do that, they basically would die.
How was the guy breathing? Because I didn't see a tank on him or anything. That's a serious question.
Yeah, so he was free diving. And so
ultimately, was he just holding his breath?
Holding his breath. He had some skills.
So what was the point of the snorkel then? Because wouldn't that get filled with water? I don't know anything. They brought
this.
Me on here because I don't know anything.
an introduction to snorkeling. This snorkel is what you use when you're going along at the surface. If you had to constantly lift your head out of the water to breathe, it would be just really frustrating. So a snorkel basically just gives you the capacity to hold your head in the water and to breathe. But you're right, you know, it can be pretty dangerous if you dive down to depth with your snorkel still in your mouth.
See?
So there are a couple of times where he had it in his mouth. And yeah, he diving down, obviously the snorkel can get filled up, and you don't want to go down on a breath, run out of all the air that you have, and then come up and try and spit a load of water out with a snorkel.
Right.
So taking it out is actually the safe way to do it. So there you go, kids. You've learned.
So I asked a good question then.
You
that
did.
That was a good question, right?
Todd, you are going to be an expert on snorkeling by the end of this podcast.
It sounds like what you're saying is that this Wall Street lawyer guy is wrong.
No, he's not wrong at all. As you could see, you know, trying to keep up with these animals like sperm whales, although, you know, with this drone footage and this footage of them underwater, they might look like they're moving kind of slow. They are not moving slow. They're cruising along, and they can just do that and disappear. You know, so it makes more sense to go along the surface with your snorkel and then dive down to try and get close to them. But he has got, a lot of balls to get in the water with sperm whales. It's definitely something that I'm just like, oh my God, they're amazing. But at the same time,
is that
I'm
a scientific
terrified.
Term?
A very scientific term.
He's got a lot of balls.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the streaming wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Are you saying that because they're dangerous? They alluded to that a little bit in the show. They were saying that, you know, they were scanning him the same way they would if he was food and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I mean, these animals are powerful. They hunt giant squid in the deep ocean using echolocation. Like, they're just epic. And I think when you get in the water with anything that big, you are made to feel, or you kind of really get a sense of your own morality. You realize that, oh, whoa, I am tiny and, you know, insignificant in comparison to this large creature. But, you know, humans and sperm whales have a bit of a sad history. We used to hunt them. They have been known to ram boats. We think that there might be some historical aggression, you know, that they still remember times that they were whaled. You know, whaling didn't stop until 1987. That's when it was outlawed internationally. And so whilst I definitely don't think that getting in the water, you should necessarily be, you know, petrified of them. But I think, you know, given that they're the largest toothed predator to ever have existed on this planet, you've got to have a little bit of like a, ooh, please don't mistake me for a giant squid moment. But still, I think it's just, yeah, just the size of them is probably pretty intimidating.
Are they endangered?
So they're actually considered vulnerable internationally. So they were whaled like heavily during the 19th and 20th century, and their populations took a massive dive then. But since the international whaling treaties come in, their numbers have started to bounce back. But the problem is that, you know, they don't reproduce very quickly. It's crazy, and this kind of blows my mind, that females don't reach sexual maturity until they're about 9 years old, and then don't reach physical maturity until they're about 30. They also don't have calves regularly. They have one calf about every 5 to 7 years. And also they live in these sort of like distinct groups. So the males kind of go off and hang about by themselves and live in the polar regions. And the females will stay in these sort of complex matriarchal groups around the tropics. And they just don't come together that much. So actually you know, them bouncing back from whaling is still happening. You know, they're still recovering from, you know, all of the whaling that happened. So it's a slow process.
Do they
process.
Know how many there are now?
You know, I don't many? Know the global numbers specifically, oh. But yeah. But wow. Hopefully enough around so that we can all go on a snorkeling trip to see sperm whales.
We'll do that. Now that I know what snorkeling is, I can do that.
Yeah, now you know how it works. You understand the fundamentals of it. Patrick Dexter says it's an addictive feeling to be close to something so massive. Do you find in your work and in your expeditions that, you know, you're kind of addicted to getting close to these huge creatures, powerful creatures?
Yeah, it is such a rush getting like up close with these just, powerful and incredible creatures. I just think, like I said before, you're kind of reminded of just, you know, kind of how small and feeble you are as a human. You know, we live in our little fabricated worlds. And then when you go and, you know, get up close to like a 50-ton animal, you're like, oh my goodness, this thing could squish me in an instant. And it really is addictive. And I think that it's just such an extraordinary thing as well to share the water with such an intelligent creature that has so many similarities in terms of, you know, the fact that they have cultures and that they live in these family groups and they communicate with one another and have dialects. And it's just like, oh my God. And so I just, yeah, I think it does become addictive. And then it's like, you just want more and more and more of it. I think you go one of two ways. You either go your way, Ethan, of like, oh my goodness, that's it, get me away from it all. Or you're just like, I want more. It's probably the best form of, probably the best drug out there, isn't it? It's free. Oh, no, actually, no, going to see ocean giants is not very free. It's probably quite expensive, but at least you don't have
I was going to say, yeah. Not like you just walk outside and dive into that hobby.
Yeah. That's got to be one of the only cons, though, is the expense. I feel like compared to other drugs or vices, it's pretty healthy, considering. I mean, you're moving around, you got to be getting cardio.
Exercise. Yeah. Not so much exercising. Of a come down afterwards as well.
So, yeah, there was a few facts that were pretty astonishing to me about sperm whales. You were mentioning that they're super smart. And I think he mentioned in the show that they have the biggest brain of any animal. Is that true?
It is true, but the size of their brain isn't everything. So the size of brain doesn't actually determine their intelligence. It's more the size of the brain to body ratio. So we think that probably, you know, other animals like dogs, cats, elephants are more intelligent, but that they are intelligent creatures. But yeah, maybe not quite as intelligent as the size of their brain maybe makes them out to be. But they do have probably one of the most sophisticated methods of communication, and we're just beginning to scrape the surface with understanding that. And yeah, just, I mean, were you guys blown away by the sounds that were coming out of this creature? It was something like out of a sci-fi movie. It's like tick, 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 tick.
That tick 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 tick.
It would be weird if that didn't have the biggest brain, though, don't you think? Like oh, the 50,000 ton animal has the biggest brain. That's interesting. It'd be weird if it's not like a squirrel had a bigger brain than a great one. I'm adding comedy to this show. I'm sorry.
I love it.
And I'm blowing it. I'm doing badly.
I think you're on a roll, Todd. You mentioned their communication. This was something I was insanely curious about, but they kind of just, you know, mentioned it and moved on. How does that work? I mean, he was saying they can communicate over like really long distances, and we heard a little bit of it, like you're describing, right? These like clicking sounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that we don't know a ton about this stuff, but what do we know?
So it's a form of echolocation, which is essentially the animals emitting high-frequency vocalizations. And it's like a sonar on a boat. It essentially helps them to navigate and orientate themselves in the deep ocean where light doesn't penetrate. Because down there, there's no light, so they have to rely on different sensors. And so they use echolocation to do that. And it's amazing. It's really varied. So if you look at different whale species, you've got some that sing. Those are the baleen whales, but sperm whales are classified as toothed whales. And toothed whales use echolocation to do this. And it's not just, you know, clicks that are being sent out to try and navigate their surroundings. There's also complex communication in there. And so they've got a load of different types. They've got the clicks and the creaks, which we saw in this episode, which just, oh my God, it makes the hairs on my arms like stand up. I just love it. It's just the like tick, 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 tick. And then it kind of goes up into that creak as they get closer. And basically what the sperm whale is doing is sending out this sonar, picks up on something as it gets closer. The intervals between the clicks get closer and closer as it's like honing in. And it's like, bam. And that squid literally doesn't stand a chance. But there's some other really cool vocalizations when it comes to sperm whales. So they've got gunshots, which can actually reach up to 225 decibels, which is louder than a plane taking off. And
what?
They think, yeah, I know, like mind-blowing. So they just send out these massive like poof gunshots. So it could, yeah, burst your eardrums. Absolutely mental.
Wait, yeah. Why does it do that? And how is it making all of these sounds?
It's doing it with this, so it's got some special organs in its head, and essentially one of them is the spermaceti organ, which actually has reference to why they're called sperm whales in the first place. And essentially this organ helps them to amplify and project sound. Basically they use gunshots to locate prey as well. So they use the clicks and the creaks to do that. And then the gunshot is like a bigger sound that they let out to try and locate prey, maybe that's over further distances. But then they also have some, so their social communication is called coders. And this is where it just gets so cool. And one of the reasons why I love sperm whales the most is that, you know, like I said, they're not just using these clicks to locate and orientate themselves. They're using them to communicate. And coders are a series of clicks, up to 20 clicks, that they'll use. And they're like sentences. And we're yet to understand what these sentences, you know, contain or what they're talking about. But if we could crack it, it could be absolutely monumental for our understanding and kind of, our understanding of animals, and we might even be able to talk back to them. But the one form of vocalization that I think is the funniest is their slow clicks, which are the sexy calls, I'm going to call them, which they let out, and it's usually the males that use them, and it's basically just a very slow and, I guess, sexy click that they're like, hey ladies, this is me, I'm big, come and find me. But yeah, it's really really complex vocalizations and way that they communicate, and
the gunshots, how would that attract prey? Wouldn't that scare them off, like a really loud sound? Or
their prey won't be detecting these gunshots, because unless they've got auditory organs, they won't actually be hearing it. So it's like a sonar. So essentially they're waiting for it to reverberate and come back at them. And because they've got, so this is another great thing about sperm whales, is like all toothed whales have this big melon-shaped head, and it's literally called a melon. And this is what helps them to shoot out these, or to amplify the vocalizations and to also focus them.
Wow.
Sorry, that was just a massive brain dump of information, Todd's like.
Right. Yeah, please don't apologize. I love that.
No, that answered my question. That was good.
So you mentioned the squid, how the squid don't have a chance, you said. I was really curious about that. They showed some of what I guess is some of the first footage we've ever seen of the sperm whales hunting at depth.
And a head jerk again.
She's biting something every time.
I mean, and absolutely.
Guts are going past.
That's right. Unbelievable.
I had to ask if that was true, if we've never seen that before. And then, like, two, what do the squid do as defense? Because it seemed like from what you're saying and from what the show described, that they're, like, defenseless, you know, that they spray this ink, or they kind of damage the whales. They had, like, little, like, scars from the squid. So what's their game plan here?
I don't think they have one. I don't think that they stand a chance.
I feel bad for them.
Why were there no, I didn't see any squid in the show. Did I miss something?
They were in the dark. They were like super deep sea footage.
See,
like
I want to know how big, are they? Like, how big are they?
Oh, they
are they just
get,
like little?
No. No, I would laugh if they were called giant squid and were actually just like a ruler length in size. That'd be pretty.
Okay,
pretty great.
Charlie, I got that. Just took a jab at me.
She's coming at you, man.
That was a poke. I liked it, though.
Okay.
Sorry, I'll reel it in. But yeah, I don't want to cause an argument with, you know, I'm pretty sure that after doing some research that, could be controversial.
I love it.
We love it. So I was doing some digging because I was like, is this actually the first footage? And I do think that it probably was the first footage. And so amazing job discovery. But I did find a paper that back in between 2010 and 2012, some Japanese researchers from the University of Tokyo actually did the same thing, but attached cameras and got the first images, to the best of my knowledge. But hey, I don't want to point fingers.
I co-authored that paper. And
you traveled to Japan in order to attach cameras to sperm whales?
That's why it's weird that you had me on the show and I'm going to drop this bomb in a minute.
You were probably so pissed watching this show and not getting any credit.
Right. It's like if someone stole one of my jokes or something.
Yeah. I mean, arguably worse. I mean, you know, this is really serious. This has serious scientific implications. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
Yeah, shots have been fired. But I do think that they were the first to record actual footage of it. But yes, we've taken photos of it before, which arguably probably doesn't give you as much information as filming it. And like, honestly, what they did in this episode was just incredible. Like, to create suction cup cameras that can withstand ridiculous amounts of pressure and then know when, like, the light knows how to come on, at the, you know, when the light dims, it's just pretty cool, right? Can you imagine having that as a job?
How many of those cameras are out there? Is that a prototype, do you think? Or can I go to like Best Buy and get one of those?
Mm-hmm. So I mean, are these cameras now more available? I think that's a good question.
No, this I know from looking into the episode a little bit more that they actually came together to try and develop these cameras, because one thing I've learned about being a scientist is that you also need to be an engineer. The amount of times that I've been in the lab and I'm like, I need this contraption that doesn't exist and I need to come up with some odd way of making it. And I can bet your bottom dollar that they probably went around to some random shops and bought the most, you know, random things. And it's probably a fantastic hodgepodge of technology. I'm sorry, Discovery, I'm not slating your camera system. I'm sure it's very good. But yeah, that's one thing that I learned after becoming a scientist, is that you kind of need to somehow be able to engineer the weirdest contraptions.
I mean, well, it worked too. So whatever they
did. Yeah, it did. Although the suspense was brilliant.
Oh, if it was going to work and then if the light was going to turn on. Yeah, that was really good. That was very game show-esque. Well, I wanted to ask about pilot whales and another species I know little to absolutely zero about. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what these whales do and how they're similar possibly to sperm whales?
Yeah, so I just want to probably maybe blow both of your minds. So pilot whales aren't technically whales, they're actually dolphins. Something that confuses a lot of people is that all dolphins are whales, but not all whales are dolphins. And so basically the way to think of it is that you've got whales and dolphins are a small type of whale, but some person decided to have a field day and start calling things whales when they're dolphins, just to confuse everybody. So pilot whales.
So the sperm whales are dolphins? Is that what you're saying?
No, they're not. They're whales.
I thought you said all whales are dolphins. I'm sorry.
The other way, I think.
The other way around.
Dolphins. All dolphins are whales.
Yes, okay. But not all whales are dolphins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got them.
Yep. There you go.
Why don't they call them pilot dolphins? I mean, that seems like an easy fix.
Yeah, easy fix. We could do that today.
But pilot whales, they're very similar in the way that they live. So they live in matriarchal communities. They're kind of considered the cheetahs of the ocean. So they can't hold their breath for quite as long as sperm whales. So sperm whales can dive for up to like 90 minutes, which is just mind-blowing. Whereas pilot whales can only go down for about 15 minutes at a time. And so what they do is just crazy, is they'll spend a lot of time at the surface sort of, you know, breathing and hanging about. And then they'll take these massive deep dives for like 15 minutes, like all or nothing, rapid hunting for squid. And again, they're using echolocation to navigate around. Pilot whales, they don't seem to like sperm whales at all, do they really? I was really surprised by that and thought it was just fascinating that they were ganging up on the sperm whales and biting their tail.
Yeah. So rude.
It's got to feel good though, right? Being a little whale and you aggravate a big whale. Like a little bully.
Okay, and I had to ask about the hydrophone too, especially speaking of kind of a hodgepodge of whatever they could find, because this to me did not seem as technologically advanced, even as the suction
camera.
What
was that? Oh, that was the microphone, right? With the salad bowl on it?
Yeah, it looked like, exactly, yeah, a salad bowl like nailed to a piece of wood that they would just stick into the ocean and then plug into a little amp.
Yep, that's science for you. Always working on a budget and finding whatever mishmash of things that we can to make scientific equipment.
I mean, it seemed like it worked like a charm, though. I mean, they were able to, you know, determine where it was and then actually steer the boat in that direction. I just couldn't believe that that was the one thing determining where they were going to go, determining how they were going to, you know, run into the whales.
I guess it's like the most reliable way to find them, because they're constantly vocalizing to communicate with one another, to hunt. And so sound travels four times faster in water. And like we were discussing before, can travel over really sort of long distances. And so this is the only reliable way that you're going to be able to find the whales, because they're not spending, sperm whales don't spend that much time at the surface. They'll be there for about 10 minutes and then they go back down to the deep ocean again. They're not like other, you know, species. species like the pilot whales, who do hang about in about 30 to 40 meters of water and will stay there mainly. Whereas I think this is like the most mysterious and awesome thing about sperm whales is just that they turn up for a short period of time and then they're like, see ya, back to the deep ocean with me. And then they're off. But yeah, it did make me laugh because the episode is like, you know, Patrick's like off on this like crazy adventure. And then there's this wooden stick with a salad bowl and a wetsuit over it. And it's like, yeah, that's right. This is how we row. But that's every scientist.
After 10 years of research, yeah. this is where we are.
Yeah. We find the most elaborate kind of ways of doing things, and I think that's part of the magic of it. You know, that is pretty epic, right? That you could get a salad bowl, an amp, a piece of wood, and a wetsuit, and then just go on your merry way and find some whales.
I wonder if it was a salad bowl that he just grabbed from his kitchen. Or if he bought it specifically for this.
Yeah.
It seems
like I never make salads. Let's might as well use this.
I mean, you know what? They probably did make it there because, like, you know, I can't imagine that he traveled through the airport with that. Like, oh, yeah, this is just my hydrophone. They were like, no, I'm pretty sure that is a salad bowl stapled to a piece of wood.
I have a good question.
Oh,
kick it.
Go on.
How often do whales actually injure people or hurt people?
I think because it's chasing ocean giants, you know, they want this element of thrill. And unless you're in the water with these animals, you're not necessarily getting that thrill. So I think that the kind of like dramatic edit made, you know, it was a way of sort of evoking that sort of passion in the audience. I mean, even me, someone that spent a lot of time in the ocean and seen some pretty big things, I, you know, that definitely added to the kind of like thrill of it. But I wouldn't say that you are in danger getting in the water with whales. They're not out to attack you. Like it discussed in the episode, they're really sensitive and actually probably more afraid of you and worried about you than, you know, you are of it. And I think the one thing, though, that you do have to worry about is just their sheer size. Like an overexcited sperm whale that came in and was maybe like, oh, gotcha, 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 all over you could inflict a lot of damage. That would probably be like having, you know, concrete blocks slammed against your head. And so you can see at moments he's like, oh, my God, trying to get away. And so I think from like the point of view of like, whoa, these are big animals and they could get overexcited and, you know, or it could decide to go, oh, I'm going to pull you down, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, I guess you just got to, they're wild animals, unpredictable. I think maintaining a distance is always the best policy and not to touch them. But of course, sometimes, like in this episode, they're curious and they want to come up to you and they want to check out who you are. They're like, what is this small sort of fleshy being that looks weird? Because we must look really weird to them. Like when they're scanning you, they're probably like, what is this strange being?
I can't help but still think about these squid because they keep swimming down. And at one point they mentioned they eat 2,000 pounds of squid a day.
Yeah.
So, and they're defenseless. So, I mean, or whatever, mostly defenseless, I guess, because the ink doesn't seem to do anything.
Well,
They
might be soft-bodied mollusks, but they have got a beak that can bite through flesh. So you saw that gash on the side of that sperm whale's face. That was probably from a giant squid that she had caught, and then its mouth was still free, and then it went. Pretty terrifying, although I don't think that they stand much chance at outmaneuvering and sort of escaping a sperm whale once it's locked on and it's coming for it. But definitely they can put up a fight. And you know what? I'd probably be more afraid of being in the water with a giant squid than I would a sperm whale, because they are just prehistoric.
How big are they? How big is a giant squid?
I think that they can get up to around 15 meters long. I think that they've been recorded that length. But it's really hard, hey? We know hardly anything about giant squid populations. The only time that we actually really know anything about them is when they've washed up on beaches. And then in terms of like population, we don't really know. The only time that we're able to sort of guesstimate that is when we go through the contents of sperm whale stomachs and find their beak still intact because it hasn't digested. Such a great
They should make an episode of the show from the From the squid's perspective, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Put a little suction cut camera on the squid. It's that a very one sided show.
It would be.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm on all Team Squid right now.
Yeah, dude.
He could do inside Ocean Giant, so we could follow his journey inside the sperm whale. He could go.
Oh, my God.
Mm. Now we're talking. Sequel.
Mm-hmm. There we
go. That would be great. Yeah, I mean, there must be millions of them because, I mean, if 2,000 pounds of them are being eaten per whale per day.
I mean, calamari's on every menu in New York, so, I mean, there must be a lot of them.
There must be a lot of them.
Well, yeah, so for something, again, you know, giant squid and cephalopods in general, so that's, you know, octopus, squid, and cuttlefish, they are really intelligent, but they grow really rapidly. So you're right, Ethan. I think there probably are millions of squid in the deep sea. And I think that it was about 5 years was like the average age of like the adults that they were. So they looked at growth rings. I can't remember specifically how they were aging these squid, but they were looking at their ages, and at about 5 years they were fully grown. So, you know, octopuses, for example, I mean, anyone who's seen My Octopus Teacher will have learned in that episode that, you know, octopus only live for a year. So they're really, really fast growing in comparison to sperm whales. But you're right, you know, they have to be plentiful. Otherwise, there would be no food for the sperm whales.
I thank you, giant squid, for your sacrifice so that we can have sperm whales. We are running short on time, but I thank you both for being here, of course, and watching this insanely wonderful program on Discovery Plus, exclusively on Discovery Plus. And Todd, I believe you have shows coming up.
I'm going to Seattle area, West Coast, Cleveland.
Hey, Cleveland, look out.
Detroit area. Go to toddberry.com. If we're plugging things, I might as well say the website out loud.
Yes, please go to toddberry.com. If you haven't seen Todd, you're making a huge mistake. You will regret
really big
for the rest of
you're
your life.
You're making a gigantic, a whale-sized mistake.
Yes, a giant squid mistake. And I assume you're doing written material, because I do have to say one of my favorite, you know, specials of yours is the Crowdwork Tour, which I've always wanted
on
to
on Amazon
ask
Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime. If you haven't seen that, another giant squid mistake, please go watch that. All the specials are great, but that one really threw me for a loop, because yeah, you went on the road and you just did crowd work the entire time.
Yeah, I didn't do one prepared joke. It was fun.
It was unbelievably good. I adore that special.
Check it out.
I'm going to check it out.
Charlie's going to watch it today or tonight, depending on what time it is.
And Charlie, something you want to tell people about?
Yeah, so if anyone wants to follow me, they can go onto social media. I'm ocean_magpie. And then in terms of things that I've got coming up, so I've actually just launched a new organization in partnership with a charity called Blue Ventures, and it's called Saltwater Britain. And it's all about taking people out for ocean adventures with impact to discover the treasure trove of life above and below UK waves, and to get people hands-on with conservation. So, Wow. Yeah, a real feel-good factor. Get out there and see amazing wildlife, but then also contribute back to conservation.
Seriously, thank you both so much for watching the show, for being on the program, and we'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Get exclusive science shows, nature documentaries, and more real-life entertainment on Discovery Plus. Go to discoveryplus.com/goodbadscience to start your 7-day free trial. That's discoveryplus.com/goodbadscience.
Good, the bad, the science. Credits. Hosted and produced by Ethan Edenberg. Executive producer Brett Kushner. Supervising producer Emily Feld. Producer Darby Rose. Editor Michael Feld. Talent booker Samantha Barella. Post coordinator Jason McCarris. And research PA Ali Rubenstein.